What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Sarah Connolly as we sit down and talk about one of the most intentionally funny and greatest movies of the 90s, Nicolas Cage's Con Air. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here in the Because of Me Network. Hope you're doing well today, and I'm sitting here with Sarah. Sarah, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, dear?
I'm very, very good today. It's been... How's your week been? You been busy these last few days?
Yeah, it's been productive.
Good, good, good. I'm saying the last few days it's been hours.
But I've still been productive. I've had 3 business meetings since we spoke last.
There you go.
And it's a Monday, so...
It doesn't feel like a Monday. It feels like a Sunday. It
does feel like a Sunday.
Oh, well. Anyway.
Okay.
But we're here to talk about the great movie Con Air. But yes. Before we go ahead and get started, you know, I need the favor from you guys. I need you to go ahead and check out becausemovienetwork.com. That's got our archive. That's got every single episode of every single thing that we've ever done, ever. From episode 1 to episode whatever this one is. All of our gamer stuff, all of our streams, everything. Okay? If you want to check out our latest news, check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Those links are in the description below in our link tree. Yes, go ahead and check it. And of course, if you listen to this and you've stumbled across this and this is not where you usually listen to podcasts,
right,
you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcasts? Let me say that again.
Podcast?
Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Podbean, okay?
We're a lot of places.
We're a lot of places. We finally got into Google last year. I'm
Yay.
So happy about that. This is the first time I've had a chance to say it. We're finally on Google.
Yes.
Google no longer sucks.
Well, there you go.
There you
I'm
go.
Sure they're happy to know that. It just warms the cockles of their heart. Even the subcockle area, yes.
The subcockle area. That's, uh-huh. Yes. And...
Okay.
So, why are we here today? We're here to talk about Con Air.
We're here to put the bunny back in the box.
Why couldn't you just put the bunny back in the box? This I said last week is part of our So Bad It's Good series. Do you agree with that statement, So Bad It's
Sure.
Good? It's actually... Not,
it's not a bad movie.
It's just very, very cliche.
It's accent. If he had been from Minnesota, it'd have been fine.
Minnesota Nick Cage?
Or somewhere, Wisconsin.
Put the bunny back in the box, eh?
No, what I mean is, it's just, right? But no, I mean, it just, yeah, it was so bad.
If there's one thing I've learned about Nick Cage during my years of studying movies and... hundreds of movies watched and a lot of Nick Cage movies mm-hmm. is this. He does not need to do that southern accent.
No.
Never, ever, mm-hmm. ever again. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't need to do it. He could have been Cameron Poe of,
yes.
you know, Hollywood, California
yes.
and still be the same
Nevada.
Badass.
Arizona.
Yeah, but he did not have to be from Alabama and
yeah.
be Alabama.
Yeah.
Only one person pulled that off, and that was Forrest Gump. That was Tom Hanks, and even then he was doing it parody-wise.
Yeah.
So what is Con Air, Sarah?
Con Air is a movie that was released back in June of 1997 that starred Nicolas Cage.
Very good.
It's an action thriller. It was directed by Simon West, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
Which explains a lot.
It does. It does. It was released by Touchstone, distributed by Buena Vista. So, you know, it's the house of mouse.
It's legit.
Yeah. It did $224 million at the box office, which is a profit of $149 million.
And the majority of the budget, I guarantee you, was Nicolas Cage's pay.
Yes. And their critical rating is 67%.
Yeah, now for those who don't know, those are new, our critical rating is basically the average between Rotten Tomatoes audience score, critic score, mm-hmm. and the IMDb user score.
Yes.
So 67%, it sounds about right, just close to 7 out of 10.
Right.
Yeah, I can see it. It's not Shakespeare, is it? It's
no, but I mean, it's got some good people in it.
It does.
I mean, it's got a lot of people in it, which we're going to get into it here in a minute. But
and it's got a lot of good people that could have been in it. Whenever we do these, I'm fascinated by who could have been in it. Because, like,
right.
you know, finding out that there were other people who could play Phil Connors in Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's always Bill Murray. But the writer Scott Rosenberg, he read a newspaper article about a plane that transports prisoners and thought what a great idea for a movie that would be. So he wrote the script and sold it to Touchstone and Jerry Bruckheimer.
Right.
Which, if you want to make an action thriller in the 90s, you went to Jerry Bruckheimer. Bruckheimer and Simpson were the go-to people. They did things like Bad Boys, this, I mean, a couple of others too, names I didn't write down, which I probably should have.
One of the things that I found interesting, is that the casting of the movie proved very difficult, as Gary Oldman, who was the director and the producer's first choice to play Cyrus, who was eventually played by Malkovich, turned down the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really weird when you think Gary Oldman could have been the guy.
Yeah.
Because Malkovich played that so... Cyrus the Virus.
Yes. And when he turned it down, a who's who of 90s actors were also considered for the part, including Bruce Willis, Kevin Bacon, De Niro, Ed Harris, Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, Sean Penn, and Alec Baldwin.
I don't think Bruce Willis would have been good because Willis was always the good guy at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like Robin Williams in that one-hour photo booth movie where, like, right, guy, you know.
Right.
Bruce Willis was firmly a good guy and was not going to do anything else.
All right. But the final four came down to Malkovich, Mickey Rourke, pre-plastic surgery, William Dafoe, and John Travolta. Rourke even pulled a hunting knife and razor on Simon West during the audition.
That's how you get the part right there.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No wonder he, like, didn't get any good acting roles for decades.
Yeah. Travolta was rejected because he and Cage were working on Face Off at the same time.
Yeah, that would have been weird of them doing, two movies. But, I don't know, Travolta would have made a good Cyrus, I think. Because Travolta was going through that phase where, you know, he could play both bad and good characters.
Yeah. Willis and Alec Baldwin were considered to play the part of Cameron Crowe as well, along with Seagal, Arnold, Kurt Russell, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, and Van Damme.
Put the bunny back in the box. Oh, Jesus.
Garland Green was written for Tim Roth, but it went to Steve Buscemi.
So it went to Mr. Gray instead of Mr. Green.
Yes. Vince Larkin was written for Cusack, but wasn't written for Cusack, but Charlie Sheen, RDJ, and Matthew Broderick were also front runners.
So let's talk about this real quick, Craig, okay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt, I don't think, could have played Cameron Poe. He was just too young and babyface looking.
No, then he could. He could have back then.
Well, this is around about 7, Tom.
Yeah.
Nicolas
Cage was too old to play Cameron Crowe.
Almost Famous.
Yeah. No, but Nicolas Cage was actually too old for the character. The character graduated
West Point
at the Academy, and Nicolas Cage looked 35 at his graduation when he would have only been like 23.
But as the end of his sentence, he looked the right age.
But it's 8 years.
True.
8 years. So he still would have only been 31. Nicolas Cage looked every bit of I'm pushing 40.
True.
So Nicolas Cage was too old to play the part. I mean, he's good. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
But he was too old to play. Pitt would have been a better age fit. Well, that's probably why I'm thinking Pitt would be too young. Because Nicolas
Cage was so old.
Yeah. I mean...
But then again, Nicolas Cage was like born looking 37. True. So, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, then what happens if they pulled Seagal into this one? Because he was in his mid-40s when this was done.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked.
You know, Arnold, they'd have to rewrite the backstory, I think, for a lot of these people.
Steven Seagal, no, that would not have worked.
Tom Cruise, I can't picture Tom Cruise doing that. Especially that time, Tom Cruise. I don't think he'd done an action movie since...
This is before Mission Impossible.
Yeah, this is pre-Mission Impossible, and this is long after Top Gun.
Yeah... It was post Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, he was more act. He was more actor rather than.
This was around Jerry Maguire, wasn't it?
Just before, yeah. It was about a year before. It was a year after Jerry Maguire.
He could have done it.
Mission Impossible.
He could have done it.
Yeah, but at the time
it wouldn't have been that great.
No, I don't think so.
No.
And who's the last name on the list? Van Damme. No. Never mind. Say no more.
Mm-mm.
Well, that's the thing. Right? You couldn't have two guys playing American soldiers in Van Damme and Arnold.
Yeah, no.
You know, you couldn't do it. Let's look at the bad guys for a minute. I don't think any of those bad guys that were in there, Bruce Willis, Kevin Bacon, blah, 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 they all could have pulled it off, I think. Because there was no
Bacon definitely could have done it.
Because there was no age limit on Cyrus the Virus. Cyrus could have been a young guy just starting his prison sentence or a
lifer. It said that he was, he was 45 and he'd spent over 23 years in prison?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, but Kevin Bacon definitely could have done it.
Yeah.
And done it well.
Yeah. I think Buscemi could have pulled it off, too. Even though he went in for another part, he could have pulled it off, too.
He could have done it. But Buscemi's also one of those people who was, like, born
looking
43.
80.
Yeah.
Got a good cast, though, when you look at it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, John Malkovich.
Right.
Ving Rhames, and Carl Meany. One of those names doesn't belong there.
I love Carl Meany.
No disrespect to Mr. O'Brien.
Right.
But he wasn't like, you know, when you read the rest of the names off here, you're going to think, wow, he got bigger billing because he did have a big part.
Yes.
And it was this is my pet peeve. If you're a British actor going in for an American part. He's Northern Irish.
No.
He's Northern Irish. Mm-mm. Anyway, if you were somebody from Europe going in to an American part, right, you shouldn't have to put on an American accent.
He didn't, did he?
Oh, yeah. He put on a real, real bad...
Oh, yeah. It's because he's Irish.
Yes. Sorry, you are right. He was born in Dublin. I thought he was born in Belfast. My apologies. I read somewhere that he was born in Belfast.
Uh-huh.
So if you were Irish, well, especially if you were Irish, you shouldn't have to go for you know, an American accent in an American movie because half of New York is Irish.
Right.
You know, Christopher Eccleston, I think, in Gone in 60 Seconds did it right and just did his English accent and there's nothing they could do about it at that point, you know.
Right.
So, then you got Buscemi.
Mm-hmm.
Plays Garland Green.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting part.
Yeah. Got the whole world in his hands. Yes.
Danny Trejo.
Mm-hmm.
MC Gainey.
Mm-hmm.
Chappelle.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse Borrego, excuse me. And I can't pronounce that name. Not Rachel T. Colton. You're going to have to help me out with this one. I'm sorry.
Michael T. Williamson?
Yes.
Yes.
All interesting parts. Only one of those is a guard.
Right.
And you got, Well, we'll get to what everybody does here in a minute. But, you know, it's a wide cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my favorite things in action movie and straight movies, and they hired a comedy actor to play one of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when they do that. Because comedy actors usually are the best kind of actors because they have the best timing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Jim
Chappelle
Carrey
is wonderful in that. Yeah.
Chappelle is absolutely hilarious in this.
Yes.
But he's also very, very good in this. It's not just, you know, oh, look at Chappelle being Chappelle.
You know, no, he's very, very good.
He's very, very good. And considering somebody wrote it for him, you know, there's no controversy involved in this one.
Right.
So.
Let's talk plot.
Let's talk about the movie itself. Let's talk about the film.
Okay.
So, Cameron Poe, played by Nicolas Page.
Cage.
Nicolas. Did I say Page?
Yes, you did.
Nicolas Cage, excuse me. An honorary discharged United States Army Ranger is found guilty of manslaughter in the death of an innocent but drunk customer while trying to defend his pregnant girlfriend. And he
wife.
That's right, it says wife, excuse me. Trying to defend his pregnant wife and is sentenced to 7 to 10 years by a biased judge.
Disclaimer, this is the episode where we can't pronounce shit.
Yes. That kind of glosses over what actually happened. I mean, it shows Paige's, Poe's trial. I'm going to say Paige again. Like, I'm getting Poe and Cage mixed up. Okay. It shows Cameron.
There was a bar fight.
There
was a dude and then who gave his pregnant wife a bunch of crap. And then him and his buddies decided to jump Nicolas Cage.
3-on-1 with a knife.
Yeah, 4-on-1 with a knife.
Yeah, 4-on-1.
Yeah. And Nicolas Cage whooped all their asses.
And killed one of them.
Accidentally, yes. Yeah. But they were trying to kill him. Yeah. They were literally trying to kill him.
It was self-defense.
Yes.
But
because he had been a ranger, he has trained his body as a weapon. And
he got screwed over by his attorney. You plead guilty, yes. You do 1 year in a
yes.
you know, in a health farm. And right. he ended up doing 7 years in...
8 years.
8 years in the pen.
Yes. Federal penitentiary. Yes. So. Okay. So 8 years later, Poe is released on parole and scheduled to be flown back to Alabama on the same day as his daughter's, Casey's, 7th birthday.
Okay. Hang on a minute.
Right?
9 months in pregnancy.
It's like 7 apiece, right?
Okay.
Seven and a half years, whatever.
Okay.
All right. So, Poe is arranged transport on the Jailbird, a C-123 airplane, along with the fellow prisoner Mike Baby O'Dell. Baby O'Dell, excuse me.
Yep.
The prison transfer flight is being used by U.S. Marshal Vince Larkin to transport several notorious violent criminals to a new Supermax prison. These include William Billy Bedlam Bedford, which is played by Nick Chinland, convicted of murdering his wife's entire family after he caught her in bed with another man. Nathan Diamond Dog Jones, played by Ving Rhames, a black supremacist who bombed an NRA meeting claiming that they represented the basest negativity of the white race. Then wrote a New York Times bestseller from prison that apparently is getting a movie adaptation starring Denzel Washington.
Yes, this was all in. Yes. This is all explained in the movie, people. We're not making this up.
Johnny 23 Baca, played by Danny Trejo, a serial rapist, Joe Pinball Parker, played by Dave Chappelle, and perhaps the most violent criminal in the prison system, Cyrus the Virus Grissom, played by John Malkovich, who served time for kidnapping, robbery, murder, and extortion, shanked 11 inmates, incited 3 prison riots, and escaped from prison twice, and likes to brag that he's killed more men than cancer.
So a real nice bunch of people.
Yes, right? You know, you just salt wanna, of the earth, folks.
Salt of the earth, folks. I mean, right. Where to begin with that? Ving Rhames' character. I mean, it's,
yeah.
it's he basically is the number two in all of this.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then you got Chappelle, who's the Chappelle's character, who is kind of the yappy dog.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Bedlam, I didn't catch much of Billy Bedlam, to be honest, because it was more like Danny Trejo's character, who, excellent line.
Right.
Excellent line in the movie says, "Can you fly?" What do you mean, right? Can I fly? Well, if it jumps out your pants, you're jumping out this airplane.
Right.
You know, when they got the female guard tied up.
That was, that wasn't him. That was Cyrus.
Yeah, that's what I said. He had the good line said to him.
Yeah.
But, prior to the flight, Larkin is approached by DEA agent Duncan Malloy, who has to put undercover agent Will Sims on board the plane to get more information out of a drug lord before he's incarcerated in the new prison. Larkin acquiesces but insists the agent go aboard unarmed, but a gun is snuck in during the boarding pat-down.
Mm.
Well, there's the problem right there.
Right.
But it's not the problem.
They brought a gun to a knife fight.
Well, not just that, and I'll explain here in a minute once we get to that part.
Okay. So shortly as the flight takes off, Jones and Grissom are able to free themselves with the help of a distraction by another prisoner, Pinball Parker, setting an inmate next to him on fire. The prisoners quickly subdue the guards, and Cyrus heads up to the cockpit and quickly kills the co-pilot who comes out to settle the riot. Cyrus seizes the co-pilot's pistol and quickly takes control of the cockpit to prevent the pilot from reporting the riot and telling the next controlled center that a small disturbance occurred, but is under control.
Okay, so they made all this build-up about the DEA agent bringing a gun on board, and it's the co-pilot's gun that causes all this.
Yes, yes. As Pinball is uncuffing the prisoner, Sims attempts to threaten Grissom with Pinball as his hostage, but Poe, recognizing that Sims is at a disadvantage since his hostage is a worthless prisoner like Pinball, attempts to talk the agent out of it. Sims ignores the advice and is killed.
Which is,
stupid games win stupid prizes.
At that point, you sit down, you shut up, you get off the plane, and you report.
Yeah.
Because you know the itinerary of the plane is it's touching down in Carson City, as it's going to talk about here in a minute. And you know there's going to be a prisoner exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Stupid people. Anyway, as Cyrus organizes the prisoners to prepare for a scheduled landing in Carson City to meet the required number of prisoners being transferred, Pinball informs Cyrus that some of the prisoners that were scheduled to get off the plane were killed during the takeover. Cameron Poe initially decides to get off, hoping to expose the takeover, but reconsiders when he discovers that they are placing tape over their mouths and as a precaution, and the pilot is transferred off in his place. The main reason for staying is that O'Dell, baby doll, or baby mm-hmm. O, excuse me, is a diabetic and the injection and he needs an insulin.
Right. And the needles were damaged in the middle of the riot. Yeah.
Johnny 23 is after the only female guard on the plane, even though Cyrus has threatened to kill Johnny if he attempts to assault her.
Right.
So that's the whole, you know, if it jumps out your pet. Because, you know, as a man who's killed more people than cancer,
mm-hmm.
he's like a lot of us and doesn't like people who assault women. So, you know, good on Cyrus for that.
But Poe was able to get the recording device off the dead DEA agent and put it on somebody who is getting off the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... That right there always confused me because you'd think there'd be an inspection of the plane prior to takeoff just in case.
You'd think so.
I mean, there's a lot of... Mr. Bruckheimer, there's a lot of things that you're kind of overlooking to, you know, make this movie more palatable for the audience.
Okay, so here's the deal, right? Cyrus and everybody, they get the plane landed. Cyrus is able to, you know, in his wonderful mastermind way, get everything done. The prisoners are taken off. The new guys are come on. Some of the new people that have come on are drug lord Francisco Sandino. And he turns out he's the one who has masterminded this whole thing and is paying for it, right? Then you've got serial killer Ramon Sally Can't Dance Martinez.
Yep.
Their new pilot, Swamp Thing Williams.
Yep.
And cannibal serial killer Garland Green, known as the Marietta Mangler.
The one thing I love about that is when, you know, they bring him out in like the Hannibal Lecter chair.
Yes.
And, you know, it's built up and everything and everybody's just like on the plane. Everybody's in awe of this guy.
Right.
Like, hey.
Right.
Love your work.
I know, right? So Grissom tells Pinball to hide the plane's transponder. And despite Poe's efforts, the plane leaves Carson City without problems, even though the guards on the prison bus discover the true identity of the prisoners on the bus, and backup arrives too late because the prisoners spotted their vehicles approaching on the runway. Around this time, Larkin discovers the plans for the plane's takeover in Cyrus's old jail cell and narrowly avoids getting killed on his way out. One of the guards disregards his advice and opens a small cigar box that has a bomb hidden inside of it.
Because, you know, making bombs is easy in prison.
Well, he had a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook.
Okay, I can understand that, but here's what I'm saying. You might be able to get the stuff you need from the Anarchist Cookbook in prison, right?
Yes.
But that wasn't the bomb that was opened up. The bomb looked like something out of Die Hard where you had one...
Well, this is true. I'm sure there were guards paid off for bits of it here and there.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yes.
That does make sense.
Yes.
And then you got Pinball who's trying so desperately to seduce the security agent as he's hiding the transponder.
So after Larkin and Malloy discover what's happened, right? Larkin, having heard about Poe from one of their guards, suspects Poe is on their side. Malloy, against Larkin's advice, immediately takes off to follow the plane's transponder, which, unknown to him, was snuck aboard a sightseeing plane. Poe, along with Jones, goes into the hole to determine the cause of the plane's slow speed and finds that Pinball's body is larger than the landing wheel compartment, having missed the plane taking off. Poe takes the opportunity to write a message on Parker's shirt to Larkin and pushes the body out of the plane, where it lands in the middle of traffic in Fresno, California.
Okay, so that's where the line from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, not Jay and Silent Bob, but Dogma. Did you know? Do you think somebody wrote a message with a body on him, like Con Air?
Yeah.
Okay, now I understand that reference.
Yes.
Even though I've seen both movies 100 times.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot to digest in this, and this is where, you know, Nick Cage's character is almost exposed as not being truthful to, you know, to who he is. He's not one of them. He's you know, he's trying to save the day and everything like that.
Right.
Poor Dave Chappelle.
Right. So Larkin has a meeting with Trisha and Casey, which is Nicolas Cage's wife and daughter, right, to determine why he's decided to stay on the plane. When a call comes in from Fresno police and Larkin is quickly made aware of the message, Larkin recognizes that the prisoner's plane is headed in the opposite direction of the disused Lerner airfield. Unable to convince Malloy of this information over the radio, he borrows Malloy's Corvette to make it to the field before the plane can land, calling the National Guard and other forces to help him secure the airfield. Aboard the plane, Poe attempts to keep his identity a secret, killing Bedford when he discovers Poe's parole letter and the personal belongings in the hull. Bye, Daddy! Yeah.
You need to put the bunny back in the box.
Yes.
Why didn't you just put the bunny back in the box?
So Poe learns from Grissom that Sandino is promising that once they arrive at Lerner, another plane will be waiting for them to help them gain asylum in non-extradition territory.
So there's a lot to unpack here for a minute, right? For a start, let's talk about the rivalry between Larkin and Malloy. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, typical American movie, my department overrules your department, which hits my department, which I love your department, you know.
But it's not American. I mean, yeah. And that's real.
No, I know. It's just, it's Excuse played. Me. It's, well, I've got a bleep. It's okay. It's overplayed, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even in a movie like this, it's way over the top, way overplayed. And, you know, then you've got Cyrus only had met Cameron Poe for a couple of hours, if that. Why is he trusting him to go down into the hold to to find out what the problem is that the plane is going on? Wouldn't he have sent, you know, Ving Rhames' character down there? I would have.
Well, but he made a good impression, though.
True, he did.
Because when he was trying to talk down Johnny 23 and...
Well, he beat Johnny...
Right, then how he handled the DEA agent and whatnot. So yeah, I mean he made
friends. That's what Baby O says. He said, you know, congratulations, not only are you knocking off the plane, you've made best friends with Cyrus the virus.
Mm-hmm.
But and then you've got, you know, it's the internal politics that I don't like. It's right. Like, you know, look, I have information that could end this while my department's taking control over this. You know, it's like, come on, guys. You know, Garland Green figures out what happened. Two went down, one comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, surely they're going to notice that one of the guys is missing, right?
Right. So the plan lands at the airfield, right?
Yep.
Running around, but no plane seems to be waiting for them, while the rest of the prisoners are forced by Grissom to dig out the plane after Poe warns him about trusting Sandino based on what he heard about Sandino's past treachery.
So again, becoming best friends.
Many hands make light work. That's what my daddy always said. Poe explores the field to try to find an injection needle for Odell's insulin, who is going into diabetic shock. Larkin, also on the field, happens upon the plane that Sandino promised, finding that Sandino has double-crossed Grissom and trying to flee on his own, and helps rescue Poe from Sandino's henchmen, who are there waiting for their boss. Larkin and Poe briefly meet and discuss the situation before Poe leaves to find an injection needle. Sandino slips away from the other prisoners to board his plane and has his pilot take off. Larkin is able to disable the plane and crash alerts Grissom, who throws a lit match at the fuel leaking from Sandino's plane, starting a fire and burning him alive.
So basically, you double-cross me, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
Again, a lot to unpack in that one condensed paragraph, but
basically, they had to crash land. They've got to dig out. They're in the desert.
Yeah.
They've got to dig out the plane so that way they could take back off again. They were waiting for a plane. It turns out they had been double crossed.
Yeah. They got to refuel.
So now they don't know where they're going to end up going.
And then you've got John Cusack and Nicolas Cage finally meet.
Right.
Well, hang on a minute. Here's a question I never understood. Right. Mm-hmm. For his actions on the plane, wouldn't he have more charges thrown against him?
Well, I mean, if he's helping, obviously, I don't know.
But even undercover cops, if they commit a crime, they could get arrested and charged.
Well, why don't you call Jerry Bruckheimer?
All right, I'll give him a call. Here we go.
And be like, yo.
Have you got his number?
No, okay. Neither do you. Okay, so... Here's the thing. The prisoners observe that armed forces are advancing on the field, and upon Cyrus discovering the small arsenal hidden in the bottom of the plane and Bedford's body, they set up to ambush trap for the forces.
So, we've got people coming from this way, people come from this way. Here's us, here's the cops. What's that?
That's a rock.
Yes. That's one of my favorite lines in cinema.
Yes.
Because of how goofy and corny it is.
Larkin goes off to help stop the troops from being massacred by reactivating an old, unused plow and using it to create a makeshift bulletproof shield, while Poe manages to find an injection needle and returns to the plane to give Odell his insulin and manages to stop Johnny from raping Bishop. As the troops overrun the trap, Grissom and the remaining prisoners return to the plane to take off, despite damage to the plane, before Poe could escape with Odell and Bishop.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
So they try to make a run for it, and
not so much. Grissom soon discovers Poe's identity after Jones found Poe's parole letter. After shooting Odell in the stomach, who tried to take the blame, Cyrus prepares to kill Poe. Malloy, having recognized that Larkin was telling the truth earlier upon encountering the sightseeing plane, has tracked down the jailbird.
A.K.A. Connor.
Yes, he and his helicopter pilot open fire on it and disables one of the engines, causing the plane to lose fuel. With Grissom and the others distracted, shooting from the aircraft ramp of the helicopters, Poe gains control of the cockpit after hand-to-hand combat with prisoners in his path and orders not to fire. With Larkin in the second helicopter tells Malloy about Poe's identity as a parolee, Malloy orders hold fire and joins forces. Attempting to land the aircraft at McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas, the crippled jailbird is forced to crash land on the Vegas Strip.
Nice. Well, again, yes. a lot to go over here because it does happen so quickly. Mm-hmm. If they got off the plane, I think they would have been, all three of them would have been rearrested. If this was reality based, obviously. But yeah. Cyrus, man.
Alright. So the landing causes injuries and fatalities among the inmates while also causing massive destruction along the strip until it comes to a halt in the lobby of the Sands Hotel. Amid the chaos, Poe is thanked by both Odell and Bishop for his help as the police arrest the surviving prisoners. Grissom, Jones, and Swamp Thing escape in a fire truck. Larkin and Poe see them trying to flee, pursue them on motorcycles, eventually killing all three escapees, Jones being hit by Poe's motorbike, Swamp Thing hurtling through the windshield and being run over after Lincoln floods the inside of the fire truck with water from the fire hose, and Cyrus being beaten by Poe, handcuffed to the fire ladder, and then sent flying after the truck crashes, leaving Cyrus to be crushed by a pile driver in a nearby construction site.
Jesus. Ow.
Poe is finally able to reunite with his loving wife and daughter, who have been brought by Larkin to meet him.
Aww.
I got you a bunny.
I got you a bunny.
You take your daddy's present now. No, she don't have to take it. You take your daddy's present now. In the final scene. Okay, so final scene's at the craps table in one of the Vegas casinos. And he asks the new shooter if he feels lucky. The shooter, Garland Green, Steve Buscemi, who is the only prisoner who escaped, takes the dice, sips a margarita, and replies with a smile.
See, why did he get back on the plane? He's got a, you know, an unused swimming pool, playing tea party with the little girl. And then,
which we don't know if he killed or not.
No, he didn't kill her.
Oh, that's right. He didn't kill her.
Because
she waves the plane off. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, he could have just...
But you worry about it for like a half second.
Yeah, because, you know, they built that tension. Right. Before they start singing Sweet Home Alabama on the...
Yes. Irony.
Well, you know, and I mean, that last act, there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
The sudden buddy-buddy of the, you know, of the agencies.
Right.
I don't buy for like a half a second. I think that, you know, both of them are trying to get that promotion, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, them taking off, they missed the part where they disabled the plane by attaching the dude's Corvette to it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'd be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got poor Cyrus.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's a horrible way to go.
It ain't pretty, but then again, he did a lot of things that wasn't pretty. So,
no, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. And that, ladies and gentlemen,
is that
is Con Air. That's the story in a nutshell. It felt very dense and very confusing reading it, and when watching it the other night, it is very dense and confusing, so to speak.
Yes, bunnies and boxes and my dad always said many hands make light work.
Who? Basically, it's the movie is who can you trust anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Where the friendships don't matter and we're just making it up as we go along. That's what it feels like. So, you know, behind the scenes, everybody thought that this was one of Nick Cage's best movies and consider it part of a holy trinity of movies that he did in very quick succession with The Rock and Face Off. I forgot he did The Rock. I know Sean Connery did The Rock. Mm-hmm. I forgot it was Nicolas Cage, and I'd get the two movies confused title-wise.
Mm. Unfortunately, a major accident claimed the life of Phil Schwartz, a special effects crew member, who was crushed by a prop plane.
So not great.
Yeah. Cusack apparently hates the film and refuses to give interviews about it.
Which is a shame, because he did really, really well. His part was really good. Really good.
And Chappelle ad-libbed most of his lines. Of
course he did.
Yes. Danny Trejo stated that the set was very alpha, as the guys try to constantly one-up each other.
Nice. Well, you know...
I mean, that's kind of a duh, considering who all was there. I mean, it was like... It was all testosterone.
Everybody was eating a bowl of nails for breakfast with no milk or sugar.
Now, this I didn't know. The song American Badass by Kid Rock is apparently based on Cameron Poe.
So that's another bad thing come out of this movie.
Yeah, right?
I'm sorry, Kid Rock. Just...
There are a lot of character crossovers in this movie. Cusack, Malkovich, and Cage will be reunited in Being John Malkovich. Chappelle and Williamson are both considered for the role as Bubba in Forrest Gump. And Nick Cage used his southern accent in this movie, even though it's considered one of the worst fake accent performances of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, guys. His accent is not...
Mm-mm.
No, he can't do that southern... you don't have to do this. Yeah.
So here's the thing. Also, now there's two main songs in the movie. One we talked about already, which was Sweet Home Alabama. The other one, there is a controversy on.
Okay, I'm
listening. Okay, so How Do I Live was originally given to Leanne Rimes to perform for the movie.
If you don't know who Leanne Rimes is, it's what Taylor Swift was in the 90s. Yes.
So she recorded the song, right?
Yeah.
Did a video for it, with it, which is her standing on top of an airplane. I mean, you know, the whole...
Yeah,
it's supposed to have cut scenes in the movie and all this other stuff.
Kinda
right.
Like, kind of like you do in all 90s movies.
Right. Unfortunately, at the last minute, they cut her version from the soundtrack and used Trisha Yearwood.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. So now Leanne Rimes went on to release the song as a single, and it is, for most people... The version that they think of when you hear the song. However, the song, the one that was used in the movie and the one that was nominated for an Oscar.
And a Razzie.
Yes, was Trisha Yearwood's version.
I did not know that.
Not Leanne Rimes. And Trisha Yearwood went on to be Mrs. Garth Brooks.
Oh.
So, yes.
So she
at the time, she wasn't.
She wasn't, but she turned out to be.
Yeah, she later on, she became Mrs. Garth Brooks.
Well, there you go. I did not know that. I obviously didn't know that.
So, And How Do I Live was only used in the very beginning. Well, it was used at the end, too, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was at the beginning in the bar. That's what they were dancing to.
And it was at the end when the family was reunited.
Yeah.
Because you needed something sappy after all that. You needed something to suck the testosterone out of the room because it was a real...
But there was huge, like, contention in Nashville because Leanne was...
Oh, she was a baby at that point.
Well, I mean,
too.
She's like
16.
No, she was a little older than that. She's like 17, 18.
Well, still.
But she was still just. I mean, to her, that's like Kanye saying, "I'm gonna let you finish."
Yeah, it was
the equivalent. So.
So when did she marry Garth Brooks? Was it 97? Was it after 97?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say if it was before 97, she was Mrs. Garth Brooks at that time.
No. It was early 2000s when they got together. He was still married to Sandy at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know who Sandy is.
Yeah, the original Mrs. Garth Brooks.
So I rate this film an 11 out of 10. I'm sorry, I have to. It's so
campy.
Bad.
It's You know what? I'll concur. So it's a 22 out of 10.
Yeah. See, well, 10 plus 10 is 20. 11 plus 11 is 22.
But I'm nuts.
No, I mean, okay. Here's the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned the accent, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to mention it again. It's horrible.
Very bad.
Can do a better southern accent.
Please
and I've
don't.
Lived here for 17 years.
Don't do that.
But I'm not going to.
Mm-mm.
Nearly 18 years.
At that point, had he already been married and divorced from Lisa?
He was married at least. I don't know if the divorce had happened yet.
How can you be married, Elvis's kid, and not have a better southern accent than that?
Well, you got to understand, Nick.
But then that's whole. Then after you look at Raising Arizona, we're not going there. We're gonna have to do a whole episode on Nick Cage and his Elvis fascination,
especially marrying the lookalike daughter. Well, okay, here's the deal, though, right? Nick Cage seems the South is just one accent.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the problem, guys. It's a generic Southern accent that's not very generic. It's, you know, pretty... It's almost as bad as Tom Hanks' one. Mm-hmm. And they're both from Alabama, the characters. So, mm-hmm. you know, how could he marry Elvis's daughter with such a bad Southern accent? Easy. Tennessee accent is completely different to the Southern accent that he uses.
I gotcha.
Chappelle's one-liners.
Perfect, as always.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can say what you want about artists. You can say what you want about his recent controversies.
Mm, we won't discuss that.
We won't discuss the controversies, mm-hmm. but you got to admit that when he's on his game and he's doing, you know, what he's supposed to be
doing. He's a funny guy.
He is. He just takes it too far sometimes. Yeah. Takes it too far sometimes. There are some unintentionally funny lines, like we've mentioned the bunny back in the mm-hmm. box and many hands and mm-hmm. she don't have to take it if she don't want to. And he's trying to be Droopy Dog, yes. and it just turns out like Nicolas Cage with a bad Southern mm-hmm. accent. I mean, this movie's full of cliched actors, cliched characters. Yes. Everything's over the top. We're not talking like Jim Carrey over the top, but...
It's close. It's
close enough.
But it's a good movie.
And it tried to be serious. It tried to be too serious, and it was too funny.
Yeah.
To be serious and too fun and too serious to be funny,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but again, if you like, it's worth a watch. I mean, it's got Jerry Bruckheimer's fingerprints all over it. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who Jerry Bruckheimer is, and you're a younger person, just think of the '90s Michael Bay.
Yes,
and if you don't know who Michael Bay is, then I've lost you.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that is it for Con Air. So, what do you guys think? Let us know. Yes. On our social media pages, okay? I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. Sarah, it's always wonderful to have you on. You're welcome to stick around if you want to. And I will see you here in just a few.
Bye.
Alright, thanks for staying on board, everybody. A sincere thank you to Sarah for taking the time out of her day to come and talk to us. She'll be back later on in the season. If you want to go ahead and have more of her goofiness, which we all know and love, go check out Instagram and Twitter at sconnelly318. And you can also find her on the becausemovienetwork.com. She's our resident blogger, and she's had some interesting takes so far this month, and long may they continue. Also, this week on the Because of Me Network, we continue the 90s gamer. We continue our playthrough of Pokemon Blue. We're almost at the end. We're almost in touch with our 7th badge, everybody. Our 7th badge. So we got 2 episodes this week, and hopefully by the end of this week, we have our 7th badge, and we can continue our playthrough to get near the end, because this one almost broke me, everybody. It really did. 42 episodes so far that have been recorded in the can, and I don't know how many more coming after that. Please save me. I miss the days of playing, you know, 10 episodes for a game. But it's my fault for picking something like Pokemon Blue. Oh, wow. but that's Tuesday and Thursday on our YouTube channel. Go ahead and check it out. Our link is in the description of this podcast. Yeah, check out our link tree. That's where you will find it. And that is it for this episode. Next week, I'm joined by Greg Gregory as we talk about the Super Mario games of the 1990s. We're not going to go into a lot of them, but mainly the highlights, the ones that changed the franchise forever, including Mario All-Stars and Mario 64. So that'll be a good one. And like I said, Sarah will be back later on in the season, and we've got some good episodes of her coming on as well. So, if you like what you hear, go check out becausemovienetwork.com. That's where you find all of our archives. You can listen to more episodes of the 90s podcast. Yes, ranging from episode 1 of season 1 to this episode and beyond. Go check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Those links are in our link tree in the description. That'll take you to all of our latest news and activities that we got coming up with the 90s podcast and, of course, the whole Because Movie Network. And, of course, if you're listening to this, if you stumbled across this, and this is not where you usually listen to podcasts, we are actually on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Podbean, okay? And, yeah, and until the next time we see you, which will be next Sunday, take it easy, and I'll see you then. Bye, everybody. Okay, well, Hawk, let me see. 1, 2.
Hello, hello.
Okay, you have your waves.
Yep. Wait, okay. Let me turn them on. I don't need a paddling.
You don't need a paddling.
Well, I mean, I might need a paddling, but I don't need a paddling.
Okay, that's being recorded. What's going on the end?
Okay.